Well, good morning and welcome to yet another in our ongoing, some might say never-ending series of political perspectives during just about the entire month of July as we attempt to give the voters of the capital city, region, and beyond an insight into the many candidates that they will be voting on in the upcoming primary, and a few of these going on immediately to the general election. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for tuning our way, both on WFSU FM at 88.9 and also on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4, in Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties. You can also see the presentation online at our perspectives page, which you can find at wfsu.org/elections. 2016. As always, you're invited to be part of the action via telephone and email. Local number is 414-1234 in the Tallahassee area. It's 800-926-8809 if long distance from you to Florida's capital city. And our email is perspectives@wfsu.org. Want to tweet? We can take that, too, at WFSU Perspective. There is a newly redrawn set of congressional districts in the state of Florida. We are so excited to report. Actually, we've been talking about it now since the process began in the wake of the 2010 census, where the legislature has to go in and redraw districts for themselves on the House and Senate side, and also the U.S. congressional districts. That became a little bit of a sticky wicket, shall we say, and was subject to a little intervention by the courts. And finally, not too long ago, we got actual new lines of congressional districts in the state of Florida. And that resulted in two districts for the Tallahassee area, where before that there had been only one. We now have District 2, which is essentially from the mid part of the city out towards Panama City to the west. And then we have District 5, more on that to come, which is from Center City, Tallahassee, out to Jacksonville. Today we're talking to a couple of the contenders for District 2, and we wanted to be totally equanimous in the whole thing. So we have one of the contenders on the Republican side who will be coming to you on the primary ballot on August 30th, and we have a contender on the Democratic side. So let's go around and meet, first of all, our contender on the Republican side, who is with us in studio, and that is Ken Sakaya. We welcome you, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
And Ken, if you could give us a little bit of your background, and particularly how that background of yours would impact the race for Congress. What would that do?
Yes, thank you, Tom. I was the U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Florida, which runs from Pensacola all the way down to Gainesville. I was appointed by the first President Bush, H.W., and that sort of has a lot to do with my perspective when it comes to participating in this race. I looked at our country and I saw that it is moving in a direction that I disagree with. I believe that over the last 7.5 years, and frankly for a longer period than that, it's been moving toward a more European socialist style government and a more secularized government. And I know that it basically has been said that where the battle rages, there the loyalty of the soldier is proved. And I felt that the battle was raging for America today. And I don't want to get to the end of my life and feel that when the foundations were under attack, I didn't do my part to defend them. I want to participate in the battle to save our American principles and way of life. I feel I'm equipped to do that. If we go through pretty much the issues that confront us, I, one way or another, seem to have gotten involved in certainly many of them, probably most of them, when it comes, for instance, to terrorism. As the United States attorney, I did put foreign and domestic terrorists behind bars. I prosecuted the violent offenders affecting our district. And we were particularly aggressive against the narco-terrorists from Colombia, even to the point that I was called to Washington one day and informed that the head of one of the cartels in Colombia had said he planned to take out the U.S. attorney and members of his top staff for the Northern District of Florida. That has to do with the fact that we were being extremely aggressive in prosecuting them. I also enforce the immigration laws. We know we have a serious problem there. I've just been endorsed by Jeff Sessions. He heads the Senate Judiciary Committee involving that. He's issued a report that is pretty frightening when you look at the even legal immigration policies of the country. I think most people would be shocked to find out how many illegal and legal immigrants are admitted into the country. Right now, for every one American added by our natural population, we add seven immigrants. Those are legal on the legal side, either by visas or other means, migrant visa and so forth. And the Pew Research entity says that in the next 50 years, we'll add 14 million Americans. And in that same period, we'll add 104 million non-Americans. And so I think there are some issues there that Senator Sessions is concerned about. When it comes to the rights of the unborn, which many conservatives are concerned about, I certainly am as a believer, as a Christian, I have fought Planned Parenthood. I spent 8 days in a grueling trial defending the Parental Notice of Abortion Act in Florida at the request of one of our governors, defending its constitutionality so that parents could be informed when their children are having abortions. I was called to Congress even 8 weeks ago to testify before Congress on Planned Parenthood's sale of fetal body parts. I was called to testify as a former U.S. attorney as to whether there was sufficient evidence to believe that Planned Parenthood had violated the law in that respect. I was called in 6 years ago to assist the legal team that was fighting Obamacare. I know everyone says pretty much on the Republican side in a district like this, they all tend to say the same things. And I urge the public to stop to consider if you were hiring somebody, wouldn't you want someone who's actually demonstrated his commitment to those issues by having fought for them over his life? I went to Washington to fight, for instance, for the Internet Decency Act because I have children of my own. And I know that with the press of a button, they can pull up the most graphic and horrific pornography imaginable without any cost. And I tried to do something about it. I even went to Washington to testify for Terri Schiavo, even though it's somewhat controversial. I felt strongly that she deserved a right to a stay. I feel that I've demonstrated my commitment to these issues by standing on the front lines and fighting for them my entire life. I was George W.'s federal trial attorney in the 2000 recount battle, handling the military ballot case before Judge Collier in Pensacola, which was an effort by the Gore people to exclude all military ballots. I stood up for their right to have them counted. And so I've been at it a good lifetime. And I want to continue to do so to fight for our American principles.
We'll get into more of that as we go throughout the program, Mr. Sakaya.
Thank you
so much. You will be opposed on the Republican primary ballot by a couple of other folks, a physician from Panama City, Florida, Neil Dunn. We talked to his folks, and he had some other commitments out in the hinterlands. Also, a hometown gal for Tallahassee who is a state government attorney, Mary Thomas, and she also was out in that part of the world. There's a possibility she might call in later on in the program, but we'll see. There's also an unopposed libertarian candidate for District 2, Rob Lappin, and he's already won his side of the primary. There is also a Democratic primary coming up August 30th. Steve Kraps, who we spoke with briefly this past weekend, we didn't think he'd be able to participate, but we do have a Democrat on the phone who is in vying for this particular job, and that is Walter Dartland giving us a ring from New York City. Mr. Dartland, we sure appreciate your giving us a call here and to share a little bit of your background, sir, if you could, and how that would impact your run for Congress here in the 2nd District.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. Let me just say that Ken, just so Ken knows, I mean, I respect all that work that he had to do as a U.S. attorney. That's a very responsible position. And you're to be congratulated for your successes there dealing with drugs and the cartel and all that.
Thank you, Walt. I appreciate that.
That's very, very important. Yeah, my background is I'm sort of, first of all, my parents were immigrants. I was the first person to go to college and law school. I went to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, where I got a degree in mechanical engineering, and then served in the Marine Corps. And then after the Marine Corps, I spent a year studying philosophy at the Catholic University of Louvain. And then after that, I went to Michigan Law School. During my career after that, I was elected a district attorney in Michigan, dealt primarily with cases, with the average kind of cases you have, break and entering, murder, the kind of stuff that you do get on local prosecutors that handle it. After that, I was in private practice before that, after that, and I came to Florida, and I practiced law here for a while, and before that, I even worked for Merrill Lynch. I went through their six-month training program as an investment counselor. And then after that, we decided that we would deal with working with private law practice. But then I had the opportunity to apply for a job that they were creating at Miami. And in Miami, they needed a consumer advocate. They needed someone to deal with the rampant water problems they were having in terms of quality by private water companies and all the other stuff that consumer situation had. And after I finished that, I came up here with Bob Butterworth when he was the attorney general, and I was deputy attorney general for him. And then after I had left, after a number of years, I came back as special counsel to handle certain cases. And we developed such programs as Strike Force on environmental problems called the Sludge Busters. And, you know, the Lemon Law was one of my key laws that I was able to get written and passed. I was a strong supporter of that for years. And after that, I've been pretty much involved in consumer issues as on the board of Consumer Federation of America. And we I was one of the founders of the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud, which is now in its 20th year, dealing with legislation, dealing with fraud in medical, automobile, and just all those areas that affect insurance. So it's been a broad area. I think I've been primarily serving the average person, the problems that lower income people have to deal with. And my career has been, you know, pretty much centered on that.
Okay. Hold on, and we'll get back to Walter Dartland in just a moment here on Perspectives. And we're also talking with one of the three Republicans in the running for Congress in District 2 of Florida, Ken Sakaya. That's all happening on Political Perspectives, and we'll be right back. Return of Political Perspectives here on WFSU and Comcast Channel 4. Before we return to the discussion of the two contenders who have joined us here today, one a Democrat, one a Republican for Congress District 2, a reminder that Bandwagon is coming up shortly, our primary Bandwagon, which is aired on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4, and Leon Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties, will be airing August 8th for Leon County races, and primary Bandwagon for Gadsden and Wakulla County races will take place August 10th, also at 7 on 4FSU. So you don't want to miss out on that. Back on the phone with Walter Dartland, one of two Democrats in contention for the primary coming up on the 30th of August for U.S. Congress District 2. You gave your background, Mr. Dartland. Talk a little bit about how that background, both in the Attorney General's office, consumer advocate, and all that, how would that connect to your run right now for Congress?
Well, starting off with the Attorney General's office, you know, I was responsible for areas like dealing with class actions, with antitrust, with consumers, consumer problems, the consumer section, writing the opinions for the local governments who wanted them, the environmental area, and a number of other areas that were critical to the average citizen here in Florida. And by the way, when I was in Miami, I dealt with class action lawsuits against Ford Motor Company and others dealing with Florida Power and Light. I was concerned about their burning high acid or, you know, contaminated fuel that would destroy the Everglades or at least harm them. We were able to stop that. We took away the license of a water company that provided, it was the first time ever in Florida that we took away a license of a local water company that wasn't providing quality water and still raising rates. I dealt with one power company that was ripping off the public here in Florida. We got a decision from the Public Service Commission that reduced the costs that the company was incurring improperly of about $80 million a year in continuum, even forcing the company to eventually sell that subsidiary where they were doing that. So I think I've been involved in trying to help the average person deal with the average problems that they incur, you know, in their regular life, whether it's a lemon law, whether it's environmental problems like we're having now in Florida. And I've served, you know, for example, as vice president of the Friends of Lake Jackson, getting involved in local area problems here in Tallahassee to be sure that our lakes are clean, that we have proper, you know, protections for the local watershed. And I think those are the things that the average person should be interested in.
All right, sir. Mr. Sakaya, you had mentioned some of the national issues that you had been very much involved in, both as U.S. attorney and now during your congressional run, such as protection of Second Amendment rights, also the anti-abortion stance, anti-terrorism, immigration, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What about some of the issues that are of perhaps just as important to some of the folks in the second district? I'm thinking funding for military operations, since there's a vast military operation in the second district, and that interstate water war that's been just a bugaboo for decades now.
Right. Well, I keep in mind what I've been doing my life. I've been handling trials. I've been taking on battles. I've been advocating aggressively against some of the top opponents that you could imagine. You know, for instance, mob lawyers from Chicago and big-time drug cartel lawyers from Miami. And I really think that it's hard to separate some of those national issues from the issues we're confronting in our district. Let me give you an example. I think oppressive government regulations, that is a national issue. There's no question about it. But it's directly impacting the citizens in our district. I hear it all over the 19 counties as I travel around, that right now our country looks like something it was not intended to be, because the agencies have morphed into this massive monolithic bureaucratic entity that exercises an incredible amount of power over the individual and over the small companies and the corporations that are seeking to thrive at what should be a free economy. And unfortunately, and this is what I've been doing, Tom, for the last 23 years, I've been representing individuals and corporations defending against those government regulations. And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to a client when we'll finally reach the point where one of us says, hey, can you believe this is America? Can you believe this is what they're requiring of us? I represent the fisheries people. And some of the regulations are incredibly oppressive, incredibly difficult to navigate through. But more significant than that, they impact everyone's pocketbooks. So I believe, as Reagan did, that the government needs to be reined in. And if ever it needed to be reined in, it's now. It's far beyond what the framers intended. They didn't pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to form a more perfect social state. They fought and died to secure the blessings of liberty to themselves and their posterity. So I'm not sure they can be separated. However, I believe the biggest problems in our district are the economic issues. I've gone to every little nook and cranny in the district, and when I look at the statistics, it's frightening, frankly, how many people are on welfare How many people are on government subsidy? How many people are on disability? How few jobs there are available in our district? How few people are actually participating in the workplace? For instance, we've gone – in most counties, we've gone from 1990, where we had about a 65% participation rate, you know, in the workforce. If you go 10 years up, it takes you down to 50. And you go another 10 years, it takes you down to 48. And then you go another 5 years, i.e. 2015, and we're down to roughly 45, 43% participation rate in the workforce. And then you look and you see how people are employed, and you find out that, hey, 36% are employed by the federal government or the state government. They're either in the education system or in the prison system. So, hey, when does it get to the point where, wait a second, how does this differ from a socialist state? Everybody's getting paid either on some sort of subsidy, or they're getting paid by the state and the feds in the workforce. So I think that's a serious problem throughout the district. But let's also go to the main problem that I referenced, and that is safety. You know, the chief aim of government, one of our founders said, is to protect life. Abandon that, and you have abandoned all. This is the chief purpose of government, to protect us. And when it comes to the military, what you asked about, Tom, this administration has emasculated the military. That may not be the right word, but what they've done is it's incredible. We used to have 8,000 flying warplanes, both manned and unmanned. We now have 4,000. We used to have in 1991 when Reagan was leaving office, we had 573 warships. We now have 273. We had 575,000 ground troops. We now have 460,000, and the president wants to bring that down to 420. This is the chief aim of government, to protect us. Now, what has happened when ISIS was chopping people's heads off and they were burning children alive and they were burying people alive? That was the time, in my view, that our president should have acted with all force, men on the ground, boots on the ground, to stomp them out then. And I used to say as I was going about the district that, unfortunately, now they're at our doorstep. But I can't say that now. I have to say, no, now they're in our living room. And I feel like, hey, who better to tackle this than someone who's actually fought the terrorists, than someone who's actually put them behind bars, who's looked them in the eye and prosecuted them? Neither of the other opponents on the Republican side can say that they've done any such thing, much less even fight for a single conservative principle that I have fought for throughout my life, whether it be the right of the unborn or the right of the military to have their votes counted or enforcing the immigration laws in the United States or putting terrorists behind bars. So among the other cases that we had when I was U.S. attorney, we had Danny Rawling, who was murdering the students in Gainesville. The state system was relatively anemic at that point. They came to us and said, can you prosecute him? And we did. We had a fellow that was burning churches all up and down the southeastern United States, 45 churches. He burned about 13 of them in our district, some of them to the ground, historic churches. I felt like I was responsible to enforce the laws. We had immigrants who were being transported into our district that we prosecuted. I personally prosecuted. So I feel like, hey, I've weathered the storm. I've stood up against these things. And right now, I think people are concerned for law and order. They're concerned for their safety. And look at our country and look at what's happening. And I feel like, hey, this has been my life. This is what I've been doing. I want to fight that battle. And I think I'm well equipped to do so.
Let's give Mr. Darland a chance to talk about not only issues relative and of relevance to the district, but any of the national ones that you would like to bring to the table, sir.
Okay, well, I'm overwhelmed by the Ken's statements. First of all, let's be honest about it. This problems we're having in the Middle East all stem from a Republican administration that falsely decided that there was a problem in Iraq that they had to solve. And that cost us thousands of lives, of military lives, and that problem has continued since that time. The big thing is, do you want your children to be drafted to go to war just because Candace says he should vote and we should go into ISIS and we should go down there into the Middle East, into that quagmire, where hopefully they should be taking care of their own problems, and send all of our troops and have troops on the ground and huge number of people getting killed, as we did in some of the other areas we've been involved with. The military-industrial complex, we received a warning about that from Eisenhower. The military has grown. I mean, it's huge, and it takes a huge amount of our amounts. The question is, should we be the policemen for all the world? Is this our responsibility? Do we not remember what happened to the English Empire when they expanded beyond where they could capably handle it? And do we want to continually to use our funds to support military actions as opposed to supporting social programs that are critical, such as education, such as free junior college for everybody, such as better medical care, such as taking care of our own citizens? And I think that's where I'm worried about where the Republican Party and Ken are heading. But there are glimmers of hope about things we can accomplish, and that's what we have to look at. And I've tried to look at some areas in which both the left and the right citizens on the left and the right agree. And they agree on a number of things, it seems like, and that they agree on corruption in our democracy, about our elections, about the fact that 250 people provide most of the money for people to get elected. Do we really have a democracy anymore? We seem to agree on some changes in gun control. The NRA, I think, is falling way behind what the people want. But nonetheless, I think most left and right leaning individuals support gun control. We support crony capitalism. Both sides. They don't want corporate welfare. There's too much money going to corporate welfare. It's a large agricultural interest. We're simply not taking care of that issue. Wall Street, subsidize, talk about Wall Street. Big problems in Wall Street. Glass-Steagall Act. I'm in support of bringing it back and making sure that the commercial and regular banking areas are separate, which led to the first depression and possibly to some extent to the second depression. Hedge funds should be, their loopholes should be closed. Inside trading, we should cut that out. And then Citizens United. Citizens United is as bad as the right to the Brown case, in which they said equal and separate is okay, and the Supreme Court said that, and they overthrew it. And I look forward to that being overthrown, and that corporations are not individuals. They don't deserve to be treated the way they are being treated now. So anyway, those are the things we should be working on, is that we jointly agree on and start improving our system.
Okay. Mr. Darlin, let me give Mr. Sakai a chance to respond there.
Yeah, thank you. I want to make clear when it comes to my problem with this administration is that when ISIS, a year and a half ago, began beheading on live film American citizens, I believe that is the time that Americans were willing to rise up, however war weary we were. And I am not endorsing the prior conflicts that have brought our troops to Iraq and so forth. That was not what my comment was intended to address, and I want to just clarify. I could see how Walt may have gotten that mixed up, but I'm talking about ISIS at the time. Wait a second. When do we stop? When do we stop and make our effort to stop them? And I think every red-blooded American looking at our fellow citizens being beheaded by these thugs and terrorists would have said, "Hey, give me a rifle. You know, I'm sick. I'm past that age, but give me the weapon. I'll go there." You know, I know that was the time I think we would have risen up. And instead, we just got this sort of like almost pretend it didn't happen. You didn't hear much of any reaction. And instead, it's just let's send some missiles and blow up people indiscriminately. And not indiscriminately, but, you know, blow up. That's our approach. Well, you know, don't get our hands dirty. And, well, no, this isn't that time. This is the time where civilization is at stake. I really believe that. I really believe our nation teeters on the verge of political, social, and economic collapse. And social, we're starting to see. And I think that's going to be fomented by ISIS, who is here now. And I believe the FBI even said recently that there's ISIS now in every state. There are ISIS members. So, hey, this is a serious thing. This is a matter of our safety. And people are fed up, you know, of that. And I feel like something could have been done to cut it short, to do something right then and there, to give them problems there where they are, as opposed to allowing them to flourish as they have.
Ken Sakaya, who is one of three Republican contenders for House District 2, the U.S. House of Representatives District 2 for North Florida. And on the phone with us is a Democratic contender, Walter Dartland, one of two Democrats running for that job. And we're talking to both of them here on Political Perspectives. You are invited to join the conversation as well at 414-1234. If it's long distance, 800-926-8809, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. A quick time out and we'll be back. Throughout the month of July, Political Perspectives here on WFSU and video for FSU, Comcast Channel 4, as we go through the many local and regional races, including the race for the newly created or redrawn, we should say that. There has always been a U.S. House of Representatives District 2 for the state of Florida, but it just looks a little bit different now than it used to, as the dividing line is essentially right straight through Tallahassee. One of three Republicans running for that in the August 30th primary, Ken Sakaya here with us, and on the phone, one of two Democrats, Walter Dartland is here with us now. Getting to Mr. Dartland, and I really want to focus in here on some of the local issues that you think are important beyond the national to when it affects the second district, which is a really unique part of Florida. As you said, Mr. Sakaya, you've got 19 counties there.
That's right.
It is an absolutely huge expanse of real estate, and you do have economic depression. The fishing industry is on its heels, all kinds of problems there. And Mr. Dartland, what do you think your priorities would be in Congress should you get the nod for that job to help out the folks in the second?
Ken's approach about this is one of the problems I have with some of the Republican candidates that and nationally are running. They're saying, well, let's do something, you know, to stop ISIS. Let's do something. Well, do you want to go and spend, do you want to have another Vietnam over there and have, you know, 25,000 troops out there, 100,000 troops out there? How many troops are we really going to need out there? No one projects those, and no one's willing to say that, but do something. Do something with the Affordable Care Act. Do something. We get rid of it. But what are we going to replace it with? I mean, that approach to me is very dangerous. I don't want another Vietnam out there. I was in the Marine Corps. I don't want our people getting killed. Ask how many parents want their kids to go out there and fight in that area. We can handle any terrorists here. We've done well, and what's happened is a lot of our things that have happened, a lot of the shootings that have happened, have not been terrorists. They've been local people with mental problems that needed to be treated, veterans with mental problems that come back from the wars that they've already been involved in. So we have to be careful what we're going to get into, and we spend enough money, and I don't think we can afford to be in another major war in the Middle East with all the other countries that are involved there, including Russia, who's in there now. But in terms of our local economy, I mean, one of the problems we have, of course, is jobs. And jobs is a question of, you know, it's easy to say we need more jobs, but the question is, how do we get it there? How do we get these people to be qualified to have jobs? After the last recession, and I get this, after the last recession, 90% of the jobs that people got after the recession were not four-year college people, but individuals who had at least 2 years of college, which is why we certainly support the idea that we should have a six-year free high school, junior college program. Students should be able to go and get those trades and get that background so that they can go out and get the jobs that are there. Now, that may have to be more mobile. Maybe the jobs are in Austin, Texas, or the jobs are somewhere else. But we have to educate our people for the skills they're going to need in the new economy. And our economy is changing up here. Plants have left. We have jobs here that don't pay as much as we should. We have a minimum wage now, which will hopefully raise people's incomes and if they have minimum wage jobs. We have to allow people to develop their wealth. Most of the people right now don't have any, they can't live for more than a month, and they'd be broke. So how do we handle that problem to help them encourage wealth? And there are programs we can do to do that. So we can deal with jobs, but we have to be honest. We have to provide the people with the skills to deal with it. And if we have the skills to deal with it, it's just like Leon County or anything else, you have a great workforce, companies will then say, let's go to a place where we already have a trained and ready workforce to help us, to help our company succeed in the Leon County and the local area of District 2. So those are the kind of things we have to be careful. I very, very much have to say I'm concerned about the idea that we should have another war and go into bankruptcy over the war and not be able to take care of our infrastructure, rebuild our infrastructure, which would create jobs all over the country. And who has been stopping the spending on infrastructure and not doing it? The Republican Party, for God's sakes, let's face it. And is it Obama's fault that he can't get anything through the Republican Congress? They vetoed everything. They stopped any kind of progress. Let's be honest. Put the blame where it belongs. It belongs with the Republican Party in Congress.
Okay. Mr. Sakai, my question, is compromise, do you think, possible, regardless of who wins the presidency? You know, be it Mr. Trump, where you would have a predominantly, if the current numbers hold, and Republicans in both the House and the Senate lining up behind him, or if Secretary Clinton wins, there's still going to be yin and yang and back and forth and an opportunity to say, well, I won't get everything I want and you won't get everything you want, but maybe we can meet in the middle somewhere and get something done. Or do you think the polarization is going to continue?
Sure. I think it depends on the issue. And, you know, if, for instance, someone's asking me to compromise over, for instance, making or giving everyone free college education, I would have a hard time, quote, compromising on that, because I don't think that's the proper constitutionally authorized purpose of the government. And I think when we say free, where is the how is it free? How is anything like that free unless administrators are willing to work without pay? And teachers are willing to work without pay, and students don't have to buy books. Somebody has to pay for it. Somebody has to pay for it. And what this does is it says, okay, you don't have to pay for it. You don't have to work part-time as I did to assist in putting yourself through school, it will be provided for you free. That's the Bernie Sanders way. And of course, all the college students say, well, 53% of everyone under 30 now views socialism favorably because they don't understand what it's like. I wonder if they would feel that way had they lived in the socialist world, you know, and see what that's like now down in Argentina, or having spent a life in the Eastern Bloc and having lived in that circumstance. My wife did. Had spent a good deal of time there. And she often says, well, you know, hey, wait a minute. They don't realize what this is amounting to. Where, well, who pays for it all? Because right now, even if the top 5% were to be taken, every dime of their money was to be taken, it wouldn't be enough to pay anything close to paying down the debt. We have a $19 trillion debt. If we stop paying borrowing tomorrow, and we started paying down that debt at the rate of $10 million a day, it would take us 5,000 years to pay it off.
Well, a legitimate question, Mr. Dartland, when it comes to that sort of a program. Here in Florida, we call it Bright Future Scholarships, and essentially it's the people who play the lottery who help pay the freight for folks to attend college. Would that work on a national level, or how would the program you're talking about for post-secondary education work?
You could have a lottery, I guess. But the bottom line is reallocation of resources. I mean, right now, we're spending so much money on our foreign experiences out there all over the world. We are not taking care of our infrastructure. We reallocate our expenditures. And you have to be intelligent about doing that. So there is enough money to pay for that extra 2 years of junior college, to provide the skills, and when the people have the skills, they'll make better incomes. There'll be better tax. They'll be taxed. There'll be more income coming into the country. So you have to take that step. It is just it is not socialism. It's just if that's socialism, then so is paid grade school, so is preschool, and we should have preschool covered for all kids. And so is high school, and so is everything else. And that's all socialism. It's all free for the kids that come here.
Okay. Mr. Sakaya, what do you think as far as what could be cut, since you said that there is certainly a ongoing budget deficit and the national debt, which is multiple trillions of dollars? You get into Congress, you say, okay, let's do some common sense budgeting, and here's what I would like to see taken out of the federal budget.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like education is principally a state and local responsibility. That is how our children prosper most, when the local community is involved in fashioning their education system and so forth. That I homeschooled. We homeschooled our kids. We feel strongly about that, and I fought for the school voucher program, being one of the attorneys who assisted in defending the constitutionality of that program, because I believe that type of program makes a lot of sense. Give people the opportunity to make those choices for themselves. But you know, when does it stop? Well, we'll make the first. I notice Walt says, well, we'll make the first 2 years free. Well, Bernie says, let's make all college years free. And wait a second, that's a massive burden. Where is that coming from? Where are we going to get that? That's the issue. We shouldn't be talking now about adding programs. Whatever happened to the $800 billion in stimulus money that was supposed to be spent for that infrastructure? You know what happened to it? It went to the crony capitalists that Walt was referring to. It went to friends of Obama, to energy companies that the government had no business being involved in picking and choosing. Look, we need to go back to an actual genuine belief in the appropriateness and the wisdom of our system that's created this incredibly wealthy nation. It wasn't a system that was designed to reallocate, as Walt says, to redistribute, to basically take the money from the productive people. Now, if I do that on my own and I see someone who's in a destitute situation, and I give to my church or I give to an entity that helps that's good. That's called charity. But if someone else takes my money, even if it's your Uncle Sam, and he gives it to someone else for the purpose of creating income equality. That's bad. That's called theft and socialism, and that's not right. So, yeah, what point do we turn into a socialist country? Oh, well, we'll just add a little more here. We'll add a little more there. We'll pay for this. But look, for goodness sakes, people are – the government is paying our taxpayers' dollars. A huge chunk of it is going to pay for people who are sitting at home who are receiving more than in 36 states. They receive more on welfare than they would get if they went and got an entry-level job. So they're not incentivized to go out and work. So, hey, look, this isn't radical. This isn't extreme. This is returning to our foundations. This is what our country was established to be, a capitalist country. And we needn't be shy about it. You know, yeah, that hey, we created the wealthiest, freest country on earth. And why are we abandoning that now at a time like this? And I'm going to put this whole issue to bed about, having another war. I'm not just talking about having another war. I'm talking
you
about
are,
when
Ken.
I'm talking.
You're
no, I wasn't. I wasn't.
Into. Come on.
Hey, wait.
Walt,
I tried, you know, I very many times when you were speaking, I would have wanted to interrupt because
I know, but really, I don't think that's appropriate.
Let me interrupt both of you, if I may, folks, since time grows short, and I want to give everyone just about a minute and a half to make the case for the upcoming August 30th primary election. Mr. Dartling, if we can start with you, there are two contenders. Mr. Kraps will also be on the ballot. Why are you the better choice for Democratic voters here in the 2nd Congressional District?
Well, I got to tell you, I do respect Steve. I met with him. He's a fine person. I think I have the kind of background that would be best suited to help the average citizen in this area, whether it's with the issues that we agree with and working on issues that we agree with Republicans, whether it's getting our infrastructure started and rebuilt so that we have jobs and we provide income to people at reasonable wages, whether it's improving the educational system for your children, the preschool program for your children, where people to send somebody to preschool now costs about as much as their mortgage, and to help them economically, to make sure that we have the Dodd-Frank, that we have the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau out there protecting the people who are have payday loans and auto loans and taking advantage of the people least able to protect themselves and which the Republicans want to get rid of or won't even want to fund. There are a lot of things we can do, and I think we can do that because we're going to be representing the individual. I want to keep our people out of war. I don't want to, I just don't want to see another Vietnam in the Middle East. And if you watch what's happened in the Middle East, folks, it hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse. And we don't want to be dragged into it. Let the Middle Easterns take care of themselves.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dartland. Same summation, Mr. Sakai. You got a three-way Republican split coming
up. We have three. You're right. It's a three-way split. And you have three choices. You can choose someone who's been playing the political game for years and years, who's basically the choice of the donor establishment class. Who's received tons and tons of money from them. And is that what you want? You want somebody who's been playing the game, who's given to liberals, who's given to Democrats, who's supported an expansion of Medicaid in Florida when it was a singular initiative of Obamacare. Or you have somebody who has 6 years of being a state worker, who has never fought on the front lines for the conservative principles we stand for. Everybody in running in a conservative district like this pretty much knows the conservative points to make. And the problem is talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. If you were looking to hire somebody for a job, would you not want to look to see, well, wait, what have they done? What have they put their lives out there for? It's like Teddy Roosevelt said, it's the person in the arena that counts. It's not the critic. It's the person whose face is marred by blood and sweat and dust, you know, and who has spent himself on costly issues of the heart. And I have done that. And so that's the choice you have, a principled conservative who doesn't just say he is, but who has fought for conservative principles his whole life.
It will be an interesting primary coming up on August 30th for voters here in Florida's 2nd Congressional District. Ken Sakaya, thank you so much for coming on, sir. We appreciate it. And Walter Dartland up there in New York City, thank you so much for calling in and weighing in on the Democratic side here on Perspectives. Thank you, sir. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Sawyer Vanderwerf and Lydell Rawls today. Providing video support for 4FSU, Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, Becca Alves, Jason Ramsamir, Paul Delva, and Frankie Verdecia. I'm Tom Flanagan. Tomorrow, it is Congress District 5. We'll reconnect then, right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.